Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, our next guest made history over the weekend, winning the world's longest and toughest winter ultramarathon, the Iditarod, across Alaska, 1,600 kilometres in length. That's pretty grueling. And if you say, what's that in old money? That's 1,000 miles. And all the while, he had to pull a sled with him as well. I was going to say a shed. That'd be a different type of race completely. He's also the first person to compete in this race. And he's here to tell us all about it. Gavin Hennigan, congratulations. Good to see you.
Thanks, very good to be here.
Yeah. So you're just off the flight.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, the flight got in there at 1:30. So yeah, literally straight here, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You look healthy for a man who's been out in Alaska for how many, 24 days and 18 hours?
Well, I've a bit of sun on my face, but that's about it. Everything else is covered up, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, how many people are invited to run, walk this event?
So yeah, you have to qualify through doing the 350-mile race, which I did in 2020, and then you need to have some sort of CV as well, demonstrating kind of what you're able to do, you know. So I have a few races like that done in the past, and I've quite a lot of winter experience. And then yeah, you get the invite to come to the thousands, you know. So it's pretty. The reason why they do that is it's very very standoffish in terms of input from the organisers. You know, there's no like kit list or anything like that.
Oh, I see.
There's no mandatory kit. There's no kind of like check,
there's no water stops.
Checking
no.
Anything. Yeah, it's all up to you. There's a lot of autonomy, which is great in terms of you know, not feeling like someone's gonna, you know, butt in and tell you whether you can or can't go forward. You make that decision yourself. You know, right. which
so
is,
many
which,
people started.
In total, there was the 1,000 mile. There was about 40 altogether between the bike, ski, and foot. You know, and then there was probably 70 going to McGrath, which is the 350-mile distance. Yeah.
How many people finished it?
There's actually the cutoff is in a few hours. There's a few people
because it's 30 days. Isn't
yeah,
it?
There's still a few people trying to finish. Actually, yeah. So at the moment, there's been I think there's been 6 on foot that have finished. Yeah, I think there probably might have been 12 that started. So yeah, 50% this year, you know.
So how does it compare to rowing across the Atlantic? which was worse?
I mean, recency bias is going to tell me this is worse. You know, I've forgotten all the bad stuff about the Atlantic, I look just very very different in terms of, you know, what they were, you know. When I rode the Atlantic, you know, I didn't see anyone for 50 days, which is, you know, a crazy thing. I always ask people, like, what's the longest you've gone without seeing anybody, you know, and people are, you know, they've only come up with a day, you yes. know, usually, but to not see another human for 50 days, you
do
know.
Do you talk to yourself out loud?
I do actually, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I actually talk to my, I disassociate with my body actually, and I speak to my body like it's a kind of a machine.
Go on, say.
Like, just of- like, you know, it could be howling wind, you know, and, you know, in a dangerous situation with, you know what I mean? And I could be getting sleepy, like, and I'd be saying to myself, like, seriously, we need to be on the ball here. Like, can we just not be getting tired right now?
And it'd be out loud.
Yeah, it would be, you know? And like, yeah, just being grateful. Like once you get in that mode, once your body adapts, like you sort of like, you know, you're in it and you can go all day every day, and yeah, you know, I'm very
well. I don't think people don't know. would you have it out with your knee, for example? Like, don't give up me now, knee.
Yeah. Well, my feet were the main problem. You know, yeah, I had a lot of trouble with my feet now. You know, just kind of with the moisture management and stuff. You know, I had a little bit of trench foot going on. You know,
what's trench foot?
It's basically when your foot gets wet and it stays wet for quite a while and you can't get it dry, you know. So yeah. I had a bit of that with the sweat, you know, in my shoes and stuff, you know, and obviously the cold as well, the combination of both, then they'd be getting cold after that. So yeah, at the moment I can't feel pretty much any of my toes.
So you did the 350,
yeah,
and then you've done ultramarathons before that, so
yeah,
I suppose in your head you've just been building up.
Yeah, like, I mean, when I first saw the 1,000 mile, it was probably 10 years ago, I was thinking that's the ultimate challenge, really, you know.
Right.
Like, you know, just to, you know, to go across Alaska like that. And Alaska to me is just like, it is the final frontier. It's the sort of, you know, all the stories are real, you know, it's really, really out there in terms of adventure, you know. So yeah, it's just
Iditarod.
Iditarod Trail. Yeah.
What's the significance of the name, do you know?
I don't actually know the significance of the name, but it's a very old historic, they call it the Iditarod Historic Trail. So it's been there since the 1800s, you know. Uh-huh. When the gold rush happened, and then the Dog's Head race started probably over 100 years ago, you know. So that's been running for a very, very long time. But it's very unique in terms of it only survives for a few weeks every winter. So most of Alaska doesn't have any roads. So all these villages in Alaska, you can only fly in there. But in the winter, you can establish a trail, you know, through the snow and everything freezes up. Like the Yukon River freezes up, you know, all the lakes and stuff.
So once it begins to thaw, it's a different story.
Yeah. So as I said, the trail only really lasts for, you know, a few weeks because they have what's called the Iron Dog, which is a snowmobile race that goes on the week before. Then we race week after, and then the Iditarod Dogshead race starts the week after us, and they actually pass us by, you know. So there's a point in the race when the Dogshead teams all come by, and there's nearly 100 teams altogether doing that race.
Oh, so that's a bit of a diversion for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, it was great to see them. Yeah.
And you've a tent, do you?
A bivouac. It's just a bivouac. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's almost like a
glorified sleeping bag.
It's a coffin, really. Like, yeah.
And did you get much sleep?
I probably averaged about 4 hours a night. Yeah. You had to kind of find a, when I did the shorter races, I slept a lot less and I was quite sleep deprived and I was hallucinating. I did all that. I've done all that before, you know.
Yeah, because I see this lady who won the first woman to win the Barclay.
Yes,
American,
Jasmine Paris. Yes, yeah. Incredible achievement.
She was hallucinating as well. She says, I always see animals in races like those. There were trees that looked like a mountain lion, a big dog, or pigs flying down.
Yeah. I've been there, seen all that.
Have you?
Yeah. In the snow especially, you know, when you see trees and with snow on them and stuff, they definitely form some crazy shapes, you know. Yeah.
What's the conversation then? You're going, it's not real.
Well, actually, I'm kind of enjoying them a bit, like,
okay,
you know.
It's company.
Yeah, I'm sort of like, oh, what's that there? And then, you know, I'm not getting too freaked out by it, yeah.
We were talking about your success yesterday. Congratulations again. And I was saying, I want that man in front of me because I want to ask him the why.
Yeah,
you know, because I've spoken to people who've climbed Everest and all sorts of mad stuff, as you call it, and the why.
Yeah,
what's your why?
Yeah, it's probably three or four or five or tenfold. Actually, you know, there's a number of reasons I'm out there. You know, I think that the foundation to it is the fact that you know, at my core, I'm an addict, and you know, I spoke about this in the past when I did my row, and it's out there in the public domain. I'm 22 years now clean and sober. You know, I went to rehab at 21 and I suffered greatly at a young age, you know, and I was very lucky to get clean and sober. And then I had very low self-esteem as a kid and even into my 20s, you know, and then I sort of got clean and sober and became an adult and got this job as a diver and really started to kind of believe that I could do stuff. And then, you know, one thing led to another with all this, the sporting and stuff. It didn't all just happen at once, you know. It gradually came on over the years, you know. So it's kind of like a case of me trying to, you know, live my best life and really try to challenge myself, you know.
Or prove yourself.
In a way, yeah, I suppose, you know.
To yourself or to somebody else, I wonder?
I'd say a lot of it's to myself, you know, and that I can do these things, you know. But it's, like I said, it's twofold and threefold because, you know, I am captivated by, you know, these outdoor spaces. You know, I really find freedom there, you know, and it's freedom from myself really as well, you know, like in that sort of self-hatred that I had when I was younger, you know.
Because I read a quote from you where you said that, particularly about the rowing across the Atlantic, that once you started, that choice was taken away from you and that you enjoyed that.
Mm. Yeah, there was a freedom in that. And that's the same with...
Go on, explain that,
was the
that
same
to me.
With the Iditarod. I suppose it was a case of like, you know, I'm in it now and I have to finish it, you know. And I suppose like, you know, for me, you know, nowadays we've just so much choice in our lives, don't we, you know, and we can choose to do this and that and we can get almost paralyzed it. But if you take that away, if you take that choice away and just, you know, this is your path and you're on it and you know, there's a certain freedom in that for me, you know. Where it was just everything else didn't matter and it was just I had to keep going forward no matter what, you know.
Yeah,
and that was the same on the Iditarod.
See, because you know a lot of people describe taking drugs or whatever as getting out of your head.
Yeah.
Because your head may not be a nice place to inhabit.
Mm-hmm.
You do a lot of things which allows you a lot of time with yourself.
Yes.
To dwell on the things that are in your head.
Mm-hmm.
Which seems to me counterintuitive.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, you can't not but face yourself out there, you know, because you've all these hours in the day and you're walking and you're thinking about life and you're reflecting on things, you know, but also that you're just, you know, you're run ragged, like you're, you know, you're, you know, 16, 18 hours a day pulling the sled, you know, you're kind of going out of your mind a bit.
Too tired to think.
It sort of strips away everything, you know, and I actually became quite emotional. I was listening to these Jack London novels about the gold rush and, you know, the Call of the Wild and these sort of books, White Fang. And yeah, like I was end up crying and stuff. And I'm not the type of lad to cry very much, you know. I think it being in the normal world for me, like I was a bit shut down, you know, in the last few years especially. And I think being out there really kind of, you know, blew me open a bit, you know.
So it strips you down, yeah. Makes you completely vulnerable.
Yes.
Go on.
Because you do feel insignificant and small out there. You know, any bravado that you do have, you know, Alaska will deal you a blow, you know, with a minus 40 night, you know, when there's ice growing off your face, you know, when you're bivouac or when you're going into a headwind and it's minus 50 degree wind chill, you know.
You're very honest about your challenges, because in a very recent Instagram, you said that, you nearly didn't get to Alaska.
Yeah.
Because of gambling.
Yeah. So look, I'm crippled with addiction, you know. It's been an issue my whole life, you know. Like I said, I've been clean and sober, and I'm very lucky to be still clean and sober. But yeah, gambling creeped in as another addiction there about 6 years ago. And, you know, it became just as bad as alcohol and drugs, you know. I hadn't been doing, you know, the last big challenge that I did was 2020, you know, and it was because, you know, I was kind of a bit, you know, hurt from gambling and I couldn't stop doing it, and I was stopping and starting, and you know, I entered Alaska this last year with the intent of really trying to, you know, put a stop to it and sort of go back to my roots, really, you know.
Yeah.
And like, it did work in a sense, because, you know, like I said there, Alaska became, you know, this kind of profound experience. I mean, aside from the challenge, the physical challenge, the sort of, you know, the race in itself, you know, it was, you know, going out there into that wilderness that, you know, sort of really peeled the kind of layers of the onion back for me, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
And what did you see? And what did you decide to do?
Well, I'm not going back, you know. I mean, I'm 4 months now without a bet, you know, and I'm very clear, like, that I don't want to go back to that, you know. Like, I suppose with something like that, you know, alcohol and drugs, you know, you put it down, you abstain from it, and, you know, you can have a lot of freedom quite easily. But, you know, with you know, things like money, sex, food and stuff, you know, it's a bit of a grey area, you know. Yeah. What I mean? So, like, I just needed to be clear with myself, like, that, you know, this was damaging me and it was shutting me down emotionally, and it was taking away my self-esteem and stuff like that, and hurting my relationships, you know. So, you know, it was very clear after coming back that I don't want to go back to that, you know.
Because you're right, it's ever-present, isn't it? Like, you turn on the telly and there's ads for betting, you know. You drive down the road and there's a big, you know, advert for some,
I mean, look, I'm from Knocknacarra, like, there's Knocknacarra and Gaul, it's just a mass of houses, and there's just across from the park there, there's an optician's and there's a bookies, like, you know, and there's a cafe, and there's no windows on the bookies, you know what I mean? And, you know, it's just horrible.
And did you gamble when you were younger?
I did a bit, yeah. You know, like, my dad was alcoholic as well, and he was big into gambling, you know. And, you know, my uncle's bred greyhounds and stuff, and, you know, was definitely there when I was younger. Yeah. I was got the dog track and stuff like that, you know. So, yeah.
And do you seek help, or are you DIY?
Like, a bit of both, you know. Like, I definitely, yeah. Like, I've, you know, there's 12-step recovery there, and there's, yeah, like, there's a lot of help there, you know, these days for that sort of thing. Yeah.
It's mad to me to think that you have achieved what you've achieved. Like, what you did in those 28 days and 24 days and 18 hours is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, what, you know, self-discipline and courage and all sorts of things. And yet you're crippled. You're crippled by this addiction.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not crippled now, you know.
No, but
I mean, you know, that's the thing.
It's ever-present, it seems.
I mean, it is. Like, that's the thing. You put down, you know, you don't necessarily... You know, you put down some, you know, the drink, the drugs and the alcohol, like, and it doesn't just go away, you know. It's there, you know, and it needs a bit of maintenance, you know. And you need to be aware that it can catch you off guard, you know. And it just manifests in other areas, yeah, like, you know, obsessive compulsive, you know what I mean? And, like, there's no coincidence that, like, I'm able to channel it in a positive way that I can be laser focused to be out there in the Alaskan wilderness for 24 yeah. days, you know. Like, and, you know, alcoholics and drug addicts are able to endure a lot of abuse, you know what I mean?
Does, like, it mean now, Gavin, that you always have to have a project? Do you think?
I think so, yeah. Like, I mean, that's not a bad thing. Everyone's, you know, sort of moving on to something else, you know. But, I mean, it is important to take the time. Like, I'm not all of a sudden now taking off next week, you know what I mean? I am respecting the downtime at the moment, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, straight away planning something else, you know.
Because your day job is fascinating as well.
Yeah.
Just to talk very briefly about that. So you're a deep sea commercial diver, and you do, is it saturation diving?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
What's saturation refer to?
So it refers to, like, living inside a chamber, you know. So you spend up to 28 days living inside a steel tube, basically, which is, you're housed under pressure. and then you go from that chamber into a diving bell, which takes you down to the seafloor to go to work, you know.
And what's the benefit of that?
Basically, you can stay. So if you dive normally off the side of a boat, say, for example, you have to decompress, you know, in the water.
Oh, yeah.
You have to slowly
you get the
come
bends.
Up. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So when you stay in a chamber, you're in a controlled environment and you're under pressure for that entire time. So you can kind of stay and work at the depth.
It's a different atmosphere to what we're experiencing
it's
here.
It's a Heliox atmosphere. So yeah, you're talking like chipmunk when you're in there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like you're constantly inhaling a helium balloon.
Exactly. Yeah.
That sounds like a bit of crack for five minutes.
Exactly. It's funny for a few minutes, and then you're trying to understand these Scottish lads that you're working with.
Yeah. Are you going to write a book?
I need to get around to it. Yeah, there's enough stories now.
Yeah,
at this
have enough stories at this stage.
Yeah,
because a book inspired you to row across the Atlantic, didn't it? What was it? Something Sweat and Tears, was it?
Yeah, Blood Sweat. Yeah, I can't remember the name of it now, but yeah, it was.
I have the name written down somewhere.
It's a few years ago now, but yeah, it was a book that you know, it's
Salt,
all
Sweat and Tears.
Salt, Sweat and Tears. Yeah.
And if you've been affected by any of the issues we've discussed with Gavin here, there's support rt.ie/helplines. Well, congratulations again and good luck with everything, because we all need a bit of luck, don't we?
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you, Ray.
Well done. Lovely to meet you. Now, a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.